Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast. I am one of your amazing hosts, Crystal Williams. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm here with my equally amazing co-host, Jazzy.
Hello.
And this week, we have someone who's never been on our show before. This is a first-time, long-time listener, first-time caller. You need no introduction, so we won't.
Oh. So, it's me, Ashley.
He's back.
Yeah, but y'all can call me Ash. My pronouns are she, they. This is my fourth time on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to our humble little show. We have fun here.
Yeah, it's again, like, in all earnestness, it's nice to be here again.
We are happy to have you again on this silly little show where we make jokes, and occasionally I make jokes based on injecting song lyrics into our conversations and seeing who gets it or not.
That's my jam.
What type of jam?
Strawberry jam.
Strawberry jam, okay. I just remembered Spaceballs.
Spaceballs!
Speaking of Spaceballs, why don't we start off talking about Lightyear?
What does that have to do with Spaceballs?
Well, speaking of Spaceballs, why don't we talk about the Lightyear porn movie? No.
Oh, yeah, Lightyear XXX. It was quite the experience, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, Lightyear, it does not reach the heights of the four Toy Story movies, but for what it is, it's a fun space adventure, I guess. I mean, it doesn't really add anything to Buzz Lightyear as a character, but if you're just going in expecting, like, a fun movie where the guy goes to space and fights Zurg, I mean, you're going to get it, but yeah, I don't have much to say about it.
That's all, honestly, all I needed it to be.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a fun little movie.
Again, it's not a bad movie, but I forgot a lot about it. like the day after I watched it. And since neither of you have watched it, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there is a twist that's kind of confusing, but you'll see when you watch the movie.
I love, do they have Wayne Knight as Zurg? That's all I fucking want.
No, I believe it's James Brolin.
I wanted it to be Wayne Knight from the cartoon so badly.
Yeah, we all did. But unfortunately, you just get James Brolin. What an untalented hack. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Good actor. Good choice. Solid choice.
Yeah, but the twist has to do with him. And I don't know if you'll like it, but but it's certainly something.
When it comes around to Disney Plus, I will probably see it.
I think Jazzy's gonna check it out this weekend.
I'm gonna try. I don't.
I mean, it's a fun movie, but it's kind of unremarkable.
I mean, I remember really enjoying that. This was years ago, but I remember after Toy Story 2, they did the TV series of Buzz Lightyear. And, like, but before the series premiered, they released, like, the pilot as a straight-to-VHS movie.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the funny thing about that series and that movie is that typically in the series, Buzz is actually voiced by Patrick Warburton. And he even voiced him for the pilot. However, when they decided to release it as a movie, they had Tim Allen come in and dub Buzz's lines.
Hmm.
Kind of reminds me of what they did with the 2008 Clone Wars movie.
Chris Evans did a good job as Buzz, I guess.
Yeah, I like Chris Evans in movies.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about another Chris Evans related project. Did you see that the new Knives Out sequel has like title and date? Or I think it's
I'll be honest. I'm gonna make a bit of a confession. I have not seen Knives Out.
You should. It is
you
great.
You really fucking should.
It's on Netflix, right?
I think maybe. I don't know.
I know for sure it was on Amazon, but I know that the new one's going to be on Netflix. So you should see it. It's really good.
Let me look it up.
I really enjoyed, you'll see it, and I won't spoil, but I enjoyed Daniel Craig getting a chance to take away from being his serious Bond self and doing a movie where he can just be, like, kind of a silly character.
He's my favorite James Bond, I think.
I like him a lot. He's a good actor. And I like seeing his range in Knives Out, is what I'm saying. It's a completely different character.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think he loved doing it. I have a feeling. It seems like a role that's exciting, you know.
I wish you guys could tell me more, but I kind of want to watch it on my own.
Yeah, that's the thing. With mystery movies, it's hard to sum up shit without spoiling it, because, like, the entire point of a mystery movie is that it's a big spoiler.
All right, well, yeah, I'm going to check that out. I'm going to check that out as soon as possible. Don't worry.
So, I had Chinese food materialize in front of my house today, in front of my apartment today.
Wait, what?
Materialize?
Like, okay, so I was going out. I was about to go out because I needed to grab, because didn't have anything in the fridge for dinner. Didn't want to pay for delivery. I had some extra time before the podcast, so I decided I was going to take a walk and grab something either from fast food joint, convenience store, grocery store. I figure it out when I got there. I open the door, and there's a fucking bag on my on my doorstep from a Chinese food place. And I'm looking all over it for a receipt, because I thought maybe, like, they just brought it to the wrong apartment. But I don't see it anywhere. I go around asking my neighbors, like, if anyone ordered Chinese food, and it wasn't the case. And so, out of curiosity, I look in, and it's like, I think it's like a chicken teriyaki, which is what I typically order when I order Chinese food. And so, okay. I couldn't figure out what apartment this belonged to. I asked around, couldn't find a receipt. I decided it was mine and decided to accept the explanation that God sent me Chinese food.
Interesting.
It was good Chinese food.
It sounds like the plot of like a horror movie where the killer.
Do you have a stalker that knows that you like chicken teriyaki and just sent it to your house?
I don't know how they know, because I don't order, because Chinese food is not something I typically order for myself. It's something like I have like when I'm with like a group of people and they decide that, like, Chinese food isn't something I usually decide for myself I want. It's usually something I usually get with a group that wants Chinese food, and then I have a thing that,
yeah.
Then I have like an order that I usually go for safety, something I know that I'm gonna like regardless of the restaurant, so.
No, that's fair. I do something similar.
So, yeah, like, I don't know whose Chinese food it was, but, thank you anyway. So.
Just give us updates on your health for the next few days, okay?
Oh no, I feel fine. It's if someone wanted to use food to hurt or poison me or whatever, they'd probably choose something that's not Chinese food. I don't know.
What if it's like poison, but like you're not like not typical poison, like you're suddenly in a, like, monster movie where your body changes into a giant monster.
Like some Akira shit or something?
I guess so, yeah.
Hot.
Or, like, one of the fucking virus creatures from Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Hot.
Crush me, mommy. Mommy, sorry. Mommy, sorry. Mommy. Sorry.
All right, so, Jazzy and I are still doing our Studio Ghibli marathon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last time we talked about it, we had just got done with Ponyo.
Yeah, which I adored.
Same.
Okay, so let's talk about the three movies that we watched since then.
We watched four movies since then.
Oh, I'm sorry, four.
Yeah. The first was The Secret World of Arrietty, which... It was good.
That was the first one I saw.
Yeah, it was about little people.
It's about.
And I don't mean dwarves. I mean like, yeah, borrowers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ever read it?
I saw like the '90s movie.
There was a '90s movie?
It was a live action movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure there's been a few adaptations of The Borrowers over the years, so.
So, yeah, it was a good movie, but
the
English dub we saw was kind of weird.
Yeah, the U.S. dub is a bit off, and that's why I'm currently in the process of importing the U.K. dub.
Yeah, one of the things we noticed with this dub that we watched was that the voice actor, what was his name that played the kid that interacted with Arrietty?
David Henry.
David Henry. Yeah, his performance was very creepy.
It was like unintentionally so. Unsettling. Like literally every line, he keeps talking like this.
It was
been
quite
a while
unsettling.
Since I've seen it, so I don't remember that quite well. But I'm sure you're right.
Well, of course I am.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
You're not always right. I mean, like, we all know Space Jam 2 is a masterpiece.
Yeah, and we all know you're full of shit, so it's all good.
Well, I do specifically recall reading her review that said it almost made her want to drink again. Thankfully you didn't, right?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Come on and slam if you want a jam.
No.
But yeah, okay, yeah, Arrietty was a solid film. I just want to see the UK dub to see if it changes my opinion any drastically.
Yeah, it probably will. And especially considering that dub has Tom Holland in it, Saoirse Ronan,
mm-hmm.
Mark Strong.
Yeah, Mark Strong,
film director of horror movies.
No, as in Young Spider-Man.
I know there are two Tom Hollands.
I'm aware. So yeah, Arrietty was good. The movie we watched after that was From Up on Poppy Hill, the second film from Gorō Miyazaki after the disaster that was Tales from Earthsea.
And
that one too.
Yeah, From Up on Poppy Hill was a massive improvement on Tales from Earthsea.
Yeah, I agree. It handled a pretty delicate subject matter in the middle of its story, and I was worried when it got to that point, but I was surprised at how they handled it very well.
Well, I mean, it was written by Goro's father, so, like,
yeah,
it was guaranteed to at least be good.
Mm-hmm. Like, but I think my only problem is the ending is quite abrupt, I remember.
Yeah, but even putting aside, like, Hayao Miyazaki's involvement, like, his direction, Gorō Miyazaki's direction, was a huge step up from Tales from Earthsea.
Some of the shot composition in From Up on Poppy Hill was genuinely incredible. Like, and I don't know if it's accurate to call it shot composition in an animated film, but...
No, I think it's appropriate to say shot composition.
Mm-hmm.
That feels right to me.
Yeah, because, like, there are cinematographers that work on animated movies.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
As someone who has studied movies, I will mm-hmm. agree. Yes. That is
but yeah, some of the shot composition and cinematography in this movie was genuinely really fucking good, and it pisses me off that people... So after Goro's third and most recent film came out, Earwig and the Witch, a lot of people ended up going back to From Up on Poppy Hill and saying that that wasn't Goro, that the success of that film had nothing to do with Goro, which I think is fucking unfair. He was the director.
No, that, yeah.
He was the director, and there was a lot in this movie that was strong in terms of the direction.
I always find it really weird and kind of insulting when someone tries to attribute the success of a project to someone other than, like, the main filmmaker, or, like, people, you know what I mean? Like, I've seen this weird trend where people do that, like, saying, oh, it's only successful because of X, you know, like,
right, and the thing is, like,
so condescending.
And here's the weird thing, their justification for that is that Hayao Miyazaki was the one who wrote the script from Up on Poppy Hill, so Goro shouldn't get credit for it, and it's like, by that logic, he didn't write the fucking script for Earwig and the Witch either, so... Like, his role was purely on direction, so. So, I don't know what people are going on about with this idea that Goro has no talent as a filmmaker. He absolutely does. From what I can tell, he also directed a 26-episode animated series, and it was actually pretty good from what I'm aware, so.
Yeah, like, I think if he's given a good script to work with, he can really make a film pop. E. Hill.
But yeah, From Up on Poppy Hill was good. I hope if Goro gets the chance to make more films in the future, he makes more like that one. And not all more right. like what we're going to be watching soon yeah. enough.
Yeah. Up next, we watched Hayao Miyazaki's last asterisk film, The Wind Rises.
So I fucking love that movie.
Can we talk about yeah. how this fucking passion project with such finely detailed and well-crafted animation and this very fascinating story, lost Best Animated Feature to fucking Frozen.
I am
bitter about that.
I remember being furious about that. I was pretty bitter.
Like, yeah, don't yeah. get me wrong, I like Frozen up until the third act where it decides to be a shit movie, but...
But,
I
yeah,
think,
Wind
I think
Rises
Frozen
was
a good movie, but Wind Rises was... leagues better.
Yeah, Wind Rises was phenomenal all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one thing that really took me in with The Wind Rises was the internal conflict of its subject.
Right, because it focuses on a man who basically was paramount in getting aircrafts built for the Japanese military around the time World War II was starting up. And we all know where that leads.
Helping out
it's a
the
very
Nazis.
Interesting yeah, it's a very interesting perspective because it's like the film does make you like sympathize and understand his perspective and how his creations were essentially tarnished. It's a fascinating film.
Yeah, because like above all, he wanted to make the best airplanes that he could possibly make, and he did. But then they were used, to hurt and kill people.
Yeah. That movie's deeply sad, too. Like, it is
yeah, but you can feel, like, every ounce of Hayao Miyazaki's passion just poured into this movie. It was fascinating.
It's a distinctly Miyazaki film. His vision is just, like, his thumbprint is on this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like, I don't even know what else I can really say about it. It's just a tremendously well-made movie.
Mm-hmm. And there's basically a shit ton of aircrafts because, of course, Miyazaki's passion for aviation is going to is going to come in. And then finally, the most recent film we watched for this marathon was the final film by the late director Isao Takahata, The Tale of the Princess Kaguya, which I want to mention, I had a Mandela effect moment with this fucking movie the other night.
Yes.
Like what, you've seen it or before, or?
No. It's that I thought it for the longest time it was just called The Tale of Princess Kaguya. But then last night there's a second "the" in the title, and I don't remember it being there before.
Yeah, like I noticed you edit that in your review in real time.
Yeah, so I like had a fucking Mandela effect moment because I could have sworn it was just The Tale of Princess Kaguya. That's what it was. Something's fucking with me.
Yeah, like, I feel like it should have been titled The Tale of Princess Kaguya.
But yeah, no, it's called The Tale of the Princess Kaguya.
But, let's not...
Weird.
Yeah, but if enough
you,
about the...
If you
enough...
Google the movie, it says The Tale of Princess Kaguya, but on IMDb and on, like, the posters... It says The Tale of the Princess Kaguya.
Yeah, that's the title of the film.
Weird.
But enough about the title of the film, let's talk about the movie.
Okay.
The movie itself, Jazzy and I agree. It is the best film we've watched in this marathon so far.
It's my favorite Ghibli film. It's my favorite Ghibli film. This is a film that took 8 years to make. And it is such a product of love and passion, and it's such an emotional story. It's a roller coaster. Like, I like to call this and Grave of the Fireflies and Only Yesterday kind of Takahata's Big Three, because these are three films that are just so perfect and kind of are just these big emotional journeys that tell you so much about Takahata as a person and his philosophies.
Yeah, the story is just so beautifully realized. I was blown away by this movie. Every aspect of it. Like, I cannot even think of one thing that is wrong with this movie.
Like, there's not a single scene that I felt was wasted. Like, every scene has purpose, whether it be to tell us something about the characters, to move the story along, to just establish mood. Like, And the English dub is fucking excellent.
Who does the voices?
Kaguya herself is voiced by Chloe Grace Moretz, who's well known for playing a hit girl in the Kick-Ass movies.
Oh, yeah, she's good.
The cast also consists of Darren Criss of Glee fame, James Caan from The Godfather and Misery. Mary Steenburgen, which... What does Mary Steenburgen do? I know I've seen her name in places, but I don't apparently she was also in Elf, which is funny considering James Caan was in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lucy Liu, voice actress Hinden Walsh, George Segal, James Marsden, Oliver Platt, Daniel Day Kim, a piece of human garbage known as Dean Cain, Beau Bridges, and John Cho.
Wow, that's a stacked cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Dean Cain.
Yeah. Chloe Grace Moretz.
Stacked cast, and then,
Chloe Grace Moretz probably gave her best performance, like, ever.
Like, I love her as Hit Girl. I always will. That's, like, one of my favorite characters in any movie ever, but... Like,
I think she's phenomenal in everything that I've seen her in. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Hit Girl was her breakout.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that leaves only two more films to go in this marathon of ours.
I just want to talk about one more thing with Kaguya that really upsets me. There are two things about this movie in regards to its release and what happened that upsets me.
One, yeah, and I know what you're talking about, but go ahead.
One, it bombed at the Japanese box office. So much so that when it came to the U.S., it only showed in limited theaters, and I was in college at the time. I had to go to a small art theater to see this movie in theaters. I remember that clearly. And don't get me wrong, I love that, but I hate going out of my way to just go see a fucking movie I want to go watch, you know?
Sometimes going to a small art theater is kind of neat, though. You know,
it is. I just it was just extremely out of my way. Like,
oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I've heard this was the most expensive Japanese animated film ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. And two, much like The Wind Rises, it was also nominated for Best Animated Feature, but lost. You want to know what it lost to?
I know what it is, but you go ahead and say it.
Big Hero 6.
Well, that was their mistake.
And I like, don't get me wrong, I like Big Hero 6. I like it a lot more than Frozen, but...
Yeah, Big Hero 6is fun, but...
Yeah, Big Hero 6 is okay. Like, it's not great, but, I mean, it's fine for what it is. But it winning over The Tale of the Princess Kaguya, fuck you.
I mean, we all know that the Academy Awards, though, in terms of, like, picking animated films is a joke, though, right? Like, they've fully admitted that a bunch of the Academy members don't watch the animated films, and then they just kind of give their votes to, well, my kid liked this one, so, or, oh, it's Disney. No, like...
Right, right, and it's what, and it's, I'm always bitter when, like, there are movies that are far beyond what Disney has made, but it's always the Disney ones that won. Like, don't get me wrong, I like Encanto, I like it quite a bit. It did not deserve Best Animated Feature over Mitchell's vs. the Machines.
Yeah, but,
no.
Like,
that movie was excellent.
I will actually be forever shocked that Into the Spider-Verse actually managed to win Best Animated Feature.
Same.
That was like one of the few times they actually chose right.
Exactly.
I remember being ecstatic about that.
It was up against two.
Oh my god.
It was up against two Disney movies.
Hmm.
I was so glad when that happened. And I don't know why I care that much. I shouldn't really care that much, but I do sometimes.
I think it's because, like, it's really satisfying that, like, they get so much stuff wrong. It's nice to see when they get something right. As rare as it is.
Remember when Brave won Best Animated Feature? What
no!
the fuck was up with that?
Boo! Boo!
What was it going against that year?
Hold on, let me look.
Let's see.
Hold on. Brave,
like,
Academy.
Was the competition any good?
Yes, well, I do remember it was very good. Hold on, let me... Like, I don't remember what it was, but give me a second.
Wait, hold on, I got it right
now.
No, here.
I got it, fuck you.
I got it,
fuck you. Okay, so the nominees were Frankenweenie, which was better than Brave.
I like Frankenweenie, yeah.
Paranorman, which was better than Brave.
I like that one.
The Pirates Band of Misfits, which I never saw, but I can probably say it was probably better than Brave.
Well, guess what? I've seen it, it is better than Brave.
And Wreck-It Ralph, which was also better than Brave.
My god, they picked the absolute worst of this bunch.
Yeah, like, all the... I wouldn't have minded any of these other films winning that year.
Yeah, Frankenweenie was kind of a passion project for Tim Burton, because he made a short film of the same name back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Go ahead. I was about to say, funny enough, the next film on our Ghibli marathon, when Marnie was there, was also nominated for Best Animated Feature, but the film it lost to, I'm at least happy about.
Yeah, Inside Out. But I feel like the film that should have won that year was Anomalisa.
I've heard good things about that one, and I wouldn't doubt it.
It's an amazing movie. It's an amazing movie.
Considering everything I've seen from Charlie Kaufman has been fucking phenomenal, I wouldn't doubt it.
But yeah, Inside Out is still a phenomenal movie.
Oh, you just reminded me. If we're talking animated films, an animated film came out. Excited for. Phil Tippett's Mad God.
Haven't heard of
it. Better now. You haven't heard of it? Okay. You know who Phil Tippett is?
No.
Scary stop motion animator. He did Empire Strikes Back. He did the Hoff stuff. And he also did Terminator. I know for sure RoboCop. He did the stop motion in that. He almost did stop motion for Jurassic Park, but they went with computers instead. He actually had built a whole bunch of things for that. He's a legendary stop motion animator who has been personally, and I think with some other people, but mostly him in the studio, been working on this animated horror film for 30 years.
Oh, damn.
And it's finally, it's a passion project too, and it's finally out on Shudder today, and I've heard nothing but really good things. It is very weird. It looks, apparently there's no dialogue at all in the film. It's just visuals. It looks stunning. It looks like an incredible piece of stop motion art. Also, very adult, very horror, very creepy. You should definitely look into it, because I know you like animation.
Yeah, I definitely will. But I'm looking at all the different nominations for, like, Best Animated Feature for each year, and it's like, God, when they were starting out, they just nominated whatever fucking animated movies got any form of coverage that those years.
Why don't we go through them all?
Should we really do that?
No, yeah. We shouldn't go through all the
Well,
the years.
Okay, well let's go through some of them then.
I was just gonna say with the first one, without looking, I want you to guess the three films that were nominated for the first ever year that they did Best Animated Feature, which was 2001.
Well, I know two of them: Shrek and Monsters, Inc.
and yep. Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, God.
Oh,
you got
it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I have them right here. It was, Shrek won that year.
No, I wasn't looking up. It was Shrek, Jimmy Neutron, and Monsters, Inc.
I just find it funny that meme lord Hugh Neutron is technically an Academy Award nominee. Which is the greatest thing I could say ever.
Well, Shrek won that year, but I feel like Monsters, Inc. should have won that year, because...
No, I
feel
like
know,
Jimmy Neutron should have won that year. It was obviously the superior
film. No.
I like all three of these films, honestly. Like, it's been a long time since I've seen Jimmy Neutron. Like, it's not a film I go back and watch, but I remember it being a solid movie, so at least these three were.
Yeah, but Jimmy Neutron was the weakest of the three.
Absolutely. It was a pilot made into a movie, so.
Mm-hmm. All right. The next year, guess what won that year?
2002?
What? What was your guess?
You said for
2002, no, yeah. It, oh, 2002, good. Yeah. What do you think won 2002, Crystal?
Well, the movie would have had to come out in 2001, correct? So...
No, the movie would have to come out in 2002.
Oh.
So which 2002 movie, animated movie, won Best Animated Feature, do you think?
Was that Finding Nemo?
No, that was 2003.
You guessed 2003, so there we go.
Okay.
Well,
brain's not going that connect. I'm not even looking up anything. I just was trying to guess.
I'm just trying to see how many you can guess right. So what do you think got one Best Animated Feature in 2002?
I honestly can't think
of
anything.
You want me to tell you the nominees?
Sure.
Okay. You have Lilo and Stitch, Ice Age.
Okay.
Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron.
Okay.
Spirited Away and Treasure Planet.
Did Spirited Away win?
Yes.
Yeah, Spirited Away won.
Yeah, it did.
You know what? I want to keep doing this and seeing if you can guess all of them.
But the thing is, she already guessed 2003.
Yeah, she did. All right, and I'll give you multiple choice for each of these, Crystal, just to help you.
Multiple,
all right. Well,
so you're three for three so far.
Okay.
So 2004. Go ahead.
All right, I will read the 2004 nominees. Okay, so first off. Shark Tale. Shark Tale.
Okay, yeah.
Shrek 2. The Incredibles.
Incredibles.
Okay, well, yeah, there you go.
Yes, The Incredible. Okay, good. All right.
But that was an obvious choice, though.
That was, I mean, I'll say I think Shrek 2 is the better movie, just because I fucking love Shrek 2. But
really? Oh, wow. I'm more into
that is a
Incredibles.
Bold, that is a bold opinion.
I fucking love The Incredibles, don't get me wrong. I just, like, Shrek 2 is a movie that makes me laugh my fucking ass off every time I watch it.
Oh, yeah,
no, I'm not even saying that's bad. I said it's a great movie, too. I'm just, you know, between the two, I'm just surprised that you lean more toward that, but not in a bad way. Just like
especially given the fact that I'm a critical asshole, right?
I
wouldn't call you okay, a second so, part. I call right. you a bitch.
Okay, fair enough. 2005. The nominees for 2005 were Corpse Bride, Howl's okay. Moving Castle, and mm-hmm. Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
I think it was Wallace and Gromit.
You're correct.
Yeah, all right.
You're nailing these. All right, you want to read 2006, Ash?
Yes, I will. So we have Monster House, Cars, mm-hmm. and Happy Feet.
Mm-hmm. Happy Feet.
Good. Yeah, even though it's the weakest of those three. But I'll tell you something.
Are you kidding me? I thought it was easily the strongest. You have shit taste. Fuck you.
No. Okay, so I'll tell you something. The person who got awarded the Oscar for Happy Feet is George Miller, who directed this little film called Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, and all the other Mad Max, you mean?
I don't know. You may have heard of it. All the Mad Max movies, yes.
Yeah, all the Mad Max movies, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he directed the masterpiece that is Mad Max Fury Road.
Right, and he directed Happy Feet, which was a good movie. Fuck you.
It was eh. Okay, 2007. Even right. though she's probably going to guess it.
All right. So the nominees for 2007 were Persepolis, Ratatouille, and Surf's Up.
I think Ratatouille won.
Yeah,
yes, you're correct.
Yeah. Oh my
god, that one's easy, mainly because I have no doubt Persepolis is what it's called actually is really good, but it's one of those movies you don't expect the Academy voters to actually bother watching. So
yeah, no, yeah. Like the really good aren't like Disney kind of get swept under the rug with mm-hmm. the Academy. I did see that movie. I saw it. It was good.
Okay. I did recently see Surf's Up, and I actually really liked it.
I will say, I think Ratatouille, like, even though I haven't seen Persepolis, in terms of between Ratatouille and Surf's Up, yeah, I'd say Ratatouille is the better one.
Yeah, well, Ratatouille is my favorite Pixar movie.
Can I give you a Pixar confession? Can I give you a Pixar confession? I've never seen Ratatouille.
You've never seen Ratatouille?
What?
No.
What the fuck?
What?
You need to watch Ratatouille fucking now, Crystal.
I think that came out, what, 2007, you said? So
yes, 2007.
I was in high school. Oh, that's when I was attempting to not feel my gender dysphoria, so I tried to be edgy for a little bit. So no, I didn't see that movie, unfortunately.
Fun times.
Yeah, no, it's not fun times.
All right, you want to read the next one, Ash?
Yes, I do. First up, we got Jazzy's favorite movie, Bolt. Kung Fu Panda and Wall-E.
Wall-E, right?
Correct.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. I'm going to say I thought Kung Fu Panda was better.
Fuck you.
That's another Pixar confession. I never saw Wall-E.
Wall-E's very good. I just think Kung Fu Panda's a better movie.
You what? You never saw Wall-E?
Oh god, I think no. Ash has gone savage.
Again, this is the same time frame when I was in high school. So, keep that in mind. that was my dark era for Pixar, where I didn't see any other films.
Alright, so...
Except for Up. I've seen Up.
Well, that's... Okay, that's the next one. We got.
Did you just give her the answer?
No, I said that's one of the nominees for the next one.
No, you said that's the next one. You gave her the answer. You fucking idiot.
Well, oh wow, I'm sure she would have missed that one.
No, I would have gotten it.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you.
I'm reading these from now on, Ash.
No. No.
Yes.
No. Coraline, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Princess and the Frog, Secret of Kells.
All right,
wait.
2010. Up next is is the nominees for that one were How to Train Your Dragon, The Illusionist, and Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3.
Wow. You got
that, yeah, that was a very hard one.
Okay, well, this one is a little bit harder. Okay, so let me tell you the nominees. Chico and Rita, Puss in Boots, Rango, Kung Fu Panda 2, and A Cat in Paris.
Rango.
Oh my God, you actually got it.
Kung Fu Panda 2 is better.
I've been watching the Academy Awards for years, so I think that's why some of these are staying in my brain. If not, I know how the Academy thinks.
Right.
Okay,
so
Jazzy, she already knows the next four, though.
Yeah, the next four we already discussed, which was Brave, Frozen, Big Hero 6, and Inside Out. So we skipped to 2016. So the nominees for that one were Kubo and the Two Strings, Zootopia.
I love that movie.
Moana, My Life is a Zucchini, and The Red Turtle.
I think Zootopia won that year.
You're correct.
Yeah,
Yeah, The Red Turtle apparently was a partial Studio Ghibli production.
Yeah, it was a collaboration with a French studio, if I'm not mistaken.
Interesting.
But, it's not on the official Wikipedia list, so we're not including that in our marathon for the listening audience.
This is a fun game. I'm pretty good at it.
All right.
All right, you want to read the next one?
Yeah, 2017. We got The Boss Baby.
Oh.
We got Ferdinand, The Breadwinner, Coco, and Loving Vincent.
It was Coco.
Yes.
And we already talked about this next one, which was Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay, yeah. So 2019, you do that.
All right, so the nominees for that year were How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, I Lost My Body, Klaus, Missing Link, and Toy Story 4.
It was Toy Story.
Yay!
Yes, it was, but Klaus should have fucking won. That movie was outstanding.
Well, I heard I Lost My Body was pretty damn good, too.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
No, there's some really interesting animated films they choose for nominations, but they just don't pick them for winning.
And since we already talked about 2021, then this next one, 2020, is going to be our last one. So, Ash, if you please.
All right. I guarantee she's going to get it, though.
Probably.
Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon, Over the Moon, Onward, Soul, Wolfwalkers.
It was Soul.
Yay!
You got all
of them. Wow. Yay!
I like that I'm finally good at a game. No, I mean,
it's like Jazzy said. For the most recent one, they definitely should have given it to Mitchell's versus the Machines.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Because Sony Pictures Animation, they're really coming into their own.
Soul was good. That was a good movie, but...
Yeah, Soul's pretty good, too. As is Encanto, but once again, Mitchell's versus the Machines.
Yeah, that movie was excellent. That was a great film. Yeah, Sony Animation... killing it recently, you know?
Yeah, some of my favorite films from them that aren't Spider-Verse or Mitchell's versus the Machines are Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Never saw any of those.
You never saw Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs?
No.
I haven't either.
What? Okay, so I think we're going to have to do a Sony Pictures Animation marathon.
Oh,
just kidding, because most of their films are shit. But they, like I said, they've been coming into their own. Okay,
ooh.
So you definitely need to see Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
So I have some news that just came out that I think would be worth discussing.
All right,
let's discuss.
So recently, Avatar Studios announced that he'd be doing three animated films, and they announced what those films are going to be and what year they're coming out.
Ah, so like Avatar, the sequels to the other Avatar.
Yeah, the animated show. So, 2024, we're getting a Kiyoshi movie. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading those books and they're excellent, but a movie, awesome.
Mm-hmm. 2025, we're apparently getting a film focused on Zuko.
Yes.
Cool. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if they're focusing more on his life in the Fire Nation before banishment or like a lot of the stuff they had in the comics, but either way, I think it'd be interesting. Zuko's definitely a character worth a movie, so. And then
Zuko was probably the most. I think he was the most interesting character from the original series.
And then in 2026, we're getting a movie focused on Korra, so I'm guessing that's going to follow up on the events of that series.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
cool.
As we all know, Jazzy is like The Legend of Korra's biggest fan.
Look, I'll give credit that in those comics they at least work with the fact that Korra and Asami are bi as fuck and are gay for each other, and not just leave it at a look at each other in front of a light and making every reactionary go, ooh, so gay.
Also, Kiyoshi's gay, just saying.
Yes. So two out of the three of these movies we're focusing on gay avatars, which I am very much okay with that.
Yes. I didn't hear the details. That's awesome. I'm pretty excited. Like, for everyone. Like, I know you're not big into, like, horror or whatever. I actually still really like it, so I'm excited for it all. You know? This is like a gift to me. Even though I did hear that they're gonna go for more of a CG animation and an animated approach. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm of two minds where, like, I think, yeah, CG animation can be phenomenal, but I also am a little bit concerned because I like the animation that it had before.
Interestingly, apparently these movies are coming to theaters, so.
I thought they were just going to go on, like, Paramount Plus.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm up for seeing gay Kiyoshi on the big screen, so.
Yeah, and they're all going to be directed by this guy named M. Night Shyamalan.
No.
No, I know that they also said that they were finding new talent to work on these films.
Yeah. You know, I'll say something. We all talk a lot of shit about M. Night Shyamalan, but, like, he genuinely does have talent as a filmmaker.
I like seeing interviews where he talks about film because I think his opinions on, like, film and the craft behind it are genuinely interesting, so.
Yeah.
I think he's probably a super cool guy to hang out with. Like,
right, like, I don't know, there's something about directors who get this unneeded stigma against them by the internet where if you see them in interviews, some of the shit they talk about when it comes to film is so goddamn fascinating. I'm not about to say this just because I fucking love Batman and Robin, and ironically, but Joel Schumacher, if you see any interview with him while he was still alive, his views on film and just filmmaking in general were so goddamn fascinating.
Yeah, and
backlash to him also had to do with homophobia, to be honest, but
yeah,
probably a little bit. And yeah, he seems like a really chill dude.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I feel like unless they're, like, corporate hack shill assholes like Michael Bay or Uwe Boll, usually a lot of these filmmakers, regardless of what they're putting out, usually have something interesting to say about film, so.
Yeah, and I will say this. Uwe Boll, he's not making movies anymore, and he runs this restaurant in Toronto, I believe, and apparently it's pretty good.
Yeah, apparently he got critical praise for his restaurants, which he...
got critical praise for something.
Yeah, dude even pointed out the hilarity in that, which I'll give him that. He has a sense of humor, at least, so...
At least he's doing something he's good at now.
Apparently he's trying to get back into filmmaking.
No, stick to your restaurant, dude.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? You found something you're good at, keep going with that.
Did you hear the theories that his films weren't, like, made to be good, but they were made to, like, funnel money?
Yeah, because there was a loophole in, like, German tax laws, so. That, because, like, in where he could make money anyway, even if the film was an absolute bomb.
Oh, like the producers.
Yeah, basically, yeah, he is the living embodiment of the producers.
Of Max Bialystock and Leopold Bloom.
Like, he's both of them in he's Max if which one was Nathan Lane? Was he Max?
He was Max Bialystock, yeah.
Yeah, he's Max if he didn't have a Leo to, like, reel him back a little.
Leo and Max, up off our backs, back on the great white way.
I never saw it, like, live.
No, I haven't either. I saw, like, a totally legal taped performance.
I've seen both movies. I've seen the old film and the new film.
Yeah, the old one isn't a musical other than the Springtime for Hitler sequence, right?
Yeah. It's straight up comedy.
Yeah, and Mel Brooks actually won an Oscar for it.
I mean, it's a good movie. Got some homophobia stuff. But so does Blazing Saddles a bit.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I guess that's just prime Mel Brooks in that era. Unfortunately.
But yeah, but with Uwe Boll, yeah, like, I genuinely have no interest in what he has to say about film, because anytime I've seen a video of him, you see, I'm sure his restaurants are great. Dude, every video I've seen of the dude himself, he seems like an asshole. Then again, he also challenges critics to boxing matches, so I don't have any doubt about that.
Oh, wow, that seems like a guy who's totally secure.
Look, say what you will about folks like Shyamalan. He doesn't fucking challenge his critics to boxing matches.
No,
Shyamalan. Wow, we got the bar real high, don't we?
Shyamalan is doing good work on his show that he produces, The Servant.
Yeah, I still need to check that out.
I really like it, but it is I will say it's a slow burn. So, like, you kind of have to just stick with it. I like the quirkiness of it, and I think
I've always felt that M. Night Shyamalan, even if the film is good, like, he has a dialogue problem. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. I feel like The Servant has not a problem, but the characters are very Shyamalan, but I think it still works. Like, when you see the show, you're gonna be like, oh yeah, this is very Shyamalan. I get exactly what you're saying. He has a certain way about it.
But I feel like he's only made only three truly awful movies. One of which is like so bad it's hilarious. And I'm talking, of course, about The Happening. The other two that are just plain awful are The Last Airbender and After Earth.
I also think Lady in the Water is pretty bad, but at least that one's kind of hilarious in how ridiculous it gets.
I mean, like, Lady in the Water is okay, but holy shit, it can get self-indulgent.
The entire movie is self-indulgence.
Like,
The Village, and then you have The Village, which was pretty good until the twist.
Yeah, I actually read that it was marketed as like this monster movie when it was not that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there are movies of his I like. I mean, I've unfortunately not seen The Sixth Sense, which, like, you know, the movie. But
he got nominated for a ton of Oscars for that movie.
Right, but I have seen Unbreakable and Split, and I genuinely liked both of those. So
both are very good.
Unbreakable is probably his best movie.
Yeah, I felt Unbreakable was kind of this fascinating study on superheroes and I watched it like about a year or two ago, like. And I feel like watching it during the superhero craze was kind of the perfect time to watch it, honestly.
Yeah, that movie was ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I feel like it aged really well.
Yeah, you know? It is a movie that has aged phenomenally well with this current climate in superhero films.
Yeah, Signs was pretty good, too.
I'm a fan. I was going to say, I'm actually a fan of Signs. I remember being creeped out when I saw it when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's dated in a lot of aspects and Mel Gibson's in it. But I remember when I was younger watching it, there's genuinely like some really scary moments. And it wasn't like, you know, like the CGI moments or whatever, when you see the alien. It's like when you just see part of it in the darkness. That's genuinely unsettling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I've never seen Glass.
Glass was, I thought it was okay.
Glass, I thought was fucking horrible.
Really? Like, I've heard split, pun intended, opinions on that movie.
I thought it was just absolutely garbage. Like, nothing. Well, there was only one part I found really even hilariously bad, and I'm gonna have to avoid saying it because I don't want to spoil the moment for you, Ash.
Yeah, but this critic that I'm mutuals with on Twitter, he says it's like one of the best movies he's ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, so like, opinion on this movie is like really split. Again,
that's interesting, actually. I'd like to see what people actually like about that movie, because not to be a dick, obviously, but like to be, because I'm fascinated by that, because this was a movie I found next to nothing redeemable for. So.
I'm very mid on the movie. I'm kind of not like on either camp, but I walked away from it going that some of the performances were great. I thought James McAvoy continues to be excellent, and I thought I could see that Samuel L. Jackson was truly excited to be back.
Like, I'll give you that.
What about Bruce Willis?
He didn't give a shit.
He was there.
Oh yeah.
He was just there.
I'll say, Crystal, I agree with you about McAvoy. I thought he was like the biggest saving grace of that film. But yeah, the thing about Bruce Willis in this movie is not only does he not give a shit, but occasionally it does show stock footage from Unbreakable. And the differences in his performance in that movie and Glass are night and fucking day.
Wow.
Like, you can tell this was Unbreakable was made at a time where Bruce Willis gave a shit, and in this movie he just doesn't care anymore.
To be fair,
yeah,
I think you can also
see his not giving a shit attitude when it comes to movies like A Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah.
Also, like, to be fair to Bruce Willis, he has a medical condition. I forgot what it's called. Did you hear that story?
Isn't the fact that he kind of stopped giving a shit like unrelated to the medical condition? Because he stopped giving a shit a while back, so
But I also have heard that it probably has affected his performances.
Okay, so I'm probably giving him a bit too much shit than he really deserves. Then, in which case,
I mean, it depends. I don't know him. I don't know how he was. Mm-hmm. But I do think that maybe some of the reasons why the performances weren't so great was because of that. I would imagine it's been around for at least 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's probably having like incremental stages of it. You know, like, that's my theory.
Fair enough.
On that. And then maybe he didn't give a shit, but also maybe he just was having issues with that. I don't want to like harp too much on someone who has a condition. You know what I mean?
True.
Like,
true. It's what I say when I say it didn't look like he gave a shit. This is less a jab at him as a person, because I don't know. Maybe he's a nice dude. I don't fucking know. So
I don't know. I don't know him.
Right. But yeah, just the point I'm trying to make with Glass is that you can kind of notice he's very tired and doesn't look like he wants to be there. So
yeah, no, he is definitely. No, that is fair. He doesn't, I mean, he's not really giving it, like, anything. I agree with you on that. I don't think the movie is, like, terrible or completely irredeemable, but I'm more in line with you, I think. I was kind of disappointed with it.
Now I want to watch it just so we can contrast all of our opinions on it.
I mean, I would suggest refamiliarizing yourself with both Unbreakable and Split first, because I think is definitely good to do that.
I will, trust me. I do want to talk about one more thing on this podcast, and Jazzy, you'll want to talk about this too. So Jazzy and I have also been doing a Star Wars marathon.
Yep.
Yeah, and recently we just watched Return of the Jedi, and we came to a strange agreement that this is probably our favorite of the original trilogy.
That is I saw your takes on that on Twitter, and I was pretty surprised, but also like I'm glad I'm a fan of it too.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I was surprised too, but it, like, being a fan of like the Evil Dead franchise, for instance, I am like a sucker for camp, and this movie has a ton of it, but it's also mixed in with very effective emotional beats. So this was really just the perfect Star Wars movie for me and Jazzy.
For me, what makes it so... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying, no, you're right. I mean, it is a satisfying film because it is a conclusion of that trilogy, you know?
I think the reason I enjoyed it is it was kind of this nice mix of very silly and gleefully over-the-top camp with these darker moments that are genuinely some of my favorites in the series. Like, it mixes these two tones together in a way that actually surprisingly works when it really shouldn't, so...
Yeah, the only element that, like, the only elements that we didn't like were the special edition CGI edits, and story-wise, the sibling reveal.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, this, I think, is, like, the quintessential Star Wars movie.
I think it best represents the series, because it's, like, this dumb action...
Yeah, exactly.
Dumb action-y schlock that's so much fun, while mixed with darker, more fascinating and intriguing moments.
Yeah, I'm surprised that a lot of people have slept on this movie.
I think I'm always going to be a Empire Strikes Back fan, but I love every entry. I love the original trilogy. To me, like, I consider it kind of like one big thing of Star Wars. So, like, each of them, I would probably either, like, I'd probably give them almost near perfect scores, to be honest.
Yeah,
I'm a pretty big fan, so I totally understand your love of that movie. It's a nice blend of what you said, the more fun elements of Star Wars, the silly stuff, the camp mixed with, like, the genuine and emotional, like, moments between, like, Vader and Luke and that story coming to, like, a close, you know?
Yeah, but when it comes to the prequel trilogy, like, my opinion on that hasn't changed at all. Like, the first one was bad, the second one was worse, the third one was pretty good.
I went through those recently, and my opinion has definitely changed, at least mellowed. You know, like, I feel like I like a lot of people were kind of performatively hating those movies, you know, I will say
that when it came out, like, fans loved it. But then after a couple more viewings, they were like, oh shit, no, this is actually a bad movie.
To a degree too, but I also think there's nuance to that sort of reaction.
Well, I mean, I mentioned this in my review that, like, I can respect that George Lucas tried to expand the scope of the Star Wars universe and, like, inject, like, some more politics into it, but it just didn't work out.
I do think the prequel era is made much better by the addition of Clone Wars being a thing.
Yeah, well, and the prequel trilogy does kind of enhance the original trilogy, if only by a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, I would say I'm like a pretty big fan of the whole series. I'm not gonna say the prequels were like great or anything, but I'm glad I watched again because I felt like I gave it a much more fair and balanced perspective than I have in the past. So.
And we will soon be experiencing the sequel trilogy, which I am looking forward to revisiting.
That should not be controversial at all, I'm sure.
So,
yeah.
My opinion on the sequel trilogy is that I actually really, I love The Force Awakens. I understand that people have issues of it being similar to, like, you know, it retreads a lot of the same ground. To me, that doesn't bother me. I really do like that movie. I need to watch The Last Jedi again because my thoughts and feelings had changed on it, like, you know, throughout the years. But I respect that film. And The Rise of Skywalker, I don't hate it as much as some people hate that movie.
I can't really say that I hate Rise of Skywalker, but it's, like, hilariously bad.
Oh, it is.
It was just a mess. I think there's great moments in it, but I also think it's a mess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Ian McDiarmid is in it, too, so obviously he's the best part.
I think there's a lot of, like, moments that genuinely work, but then there's a lot of, like, missed ideas and changed ideas and, like...
Yeah. Then you have your, you know, somehow Palpatine returned moments.
Somehow. Right. Palpatine has returned.
Yeah, just somehow. It's like, how did they think that was gonna fly?
Somehow. They thought it would somehow fly.
Exactly.
But I also love those Star Wars shows. You're not gonna are you gonna go for that in your marathon or just the film?
I've been watching Clone Wars on my own time, honestly. Like, I've been watching an episode per day, which, speaking of which, I need to watch my daily episode sometime tonight, so.
I'm watching you give reviews of it, and I see that you like at least a few of the episodes.
Yeah, season one's a bit rough, but I'm enjoying it, so.
Yeah, I'm with you. Season 1/2 is a bit rough, but I feel like the show really does find its footing, and I think there's a lot of really good stuff.
I've been watching it with a guide because apparently a lot of it's aired out of order. So I have managed to see a season 2 episode and a couple season 3 ones. So, and after seeing those, I have no doubt that it gets good because the episodes I saw of those, especially the season 3 ones, were really fucking good. So.
Yeah, I did the same thing as you. I followed the guide. Actually, I think, doesn't the Star Wars, like, website, the official one,
that's
that list?
Yeah, that's the one I'm using.
Okay, yeah, that too. I actually printed it out, and I did this thing where, like, I printed it out, and I got a highlighter, and as soon as I, like, watched the episode, I would highlight, like, mark it off my list.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very geeky way of doing it, but it really helped me organize my viewing of that show for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm happy that you guys loved the last film you saw.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to love it that much, but here we are.
I want to
also Hammy Ian McDiarmid is the best, so.
If you will not be turned, you will be destroyed.
My favorite line from him is, "Oh, I'm afraid the deflector shield will be quite operational when your friends arrive."
Bless him. He was in his 30s.
I saw a picture of him at that, like, from that time without the Palpatine makeup. This dude has eternally been an old man.
Oh, yeah, right? Oh, my God.
It's fucking crazy. This guy has always looked old. Like, I thought it was just really good makeup, but no.
Your feeble skills are no match for the power of the dark side.
He's great. Bless him.
He really
He's
is.
Amazing.
Also, yeah, some of the line reads from the villains are some of my favorites in that. Like, one of my favorite lines is Vader going, "Yes, your thoughts betray you, especially for sister. So, you have a twin sister.
If you won't turn to the dark side, then perhaps she will."
Rage Never! Happens.
You know what line stays in my head?
What?
About Vader? It's, "You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away."
Because that's, like, one of the few times we hear him pissed off.
Yeah, like, for some reason, the way he says that, like, it's almost, like, sing-talking to me. Like, it's like ingrained in my brain. So like when you ask me to like bring up memories of Vader, that's one of the few things that pops in my head.
My friend Tom Schalk on Twitter today brought up the line read from Return of the Jedi where he just goes, "He will come to me." It's Uwu Vader.
I love Tom.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
You know who's also wonderful? Geez.
Who?
You.
Oh, that was... No, I need to hear that.
I can be genuine sometimes. I may be dumb of ass, but I'm big of heart as well.
Fair enough.
Oh, I actually enjoy this positive Star Wars conversation because so much Star Wars stuff is so negative. I
like Star Wars. I hate the fans.
Jazzy, I know I offered it to you, but Ash, if you want to see it with me, we can plan to see that that documentary or work it out somehow. The prequel Strike Back. It is a great documentary. I recommend it. The movie itself is way more interesting and balanced than the title suggests. So.
Good stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah?
If you don't want to engage in any fandom thing at all, you don't have to watch that one. But that one is good. I give Crystal Seal of Approval. Put a little stamp on it.
I mean,
it's way better than the people.
What's it called again?
The prequel Strike Back.
Ooh, okay.
It's better than the People versus George Lucas, which that movie is tries. I don't think it completely succeeds. Did you ever see that one or no?
No, because I don't really have any interest in it.
Okay. Yeah. I like documentaries. I am a documentary bitch.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I do need to renew my subscription to Shudder. Because from the stuff you've been telling me about, like, I'm
Shudder's
missing out on a lot.
Shudder is phenomenal. It's got so much good stuff. Like, great documentary stuff, great like, films. Mad God just came out. It's worth it if you're a horror fan. It's totally worth it. Yeah, absolutely. I'm currently watching, and I'm watching it in parts because I don't have time to view it as it's, I guess, intended. But this is, I think it's called In the Heart of Darkness, Part 2. I watched Part 1 about 2 years ago when it came out. The first one was a 4.5-hour documentary on 80s horror films. And this sequel is another 4.5-hour documentary on 80s horror films.
Hmm. Ooh.
So they did like 9.5-hour documentary talking about 80s horror. And they got some really interesting guests on, and what's interesting about the second part is they're going, so for the first movie, they would go by year and then pick out a few movies and talk about them individually. But this one they're going again, but the choices, since they did a sequel to it, the choices are way more deep cut. Like most of the movies they're talking about, I've never heard of.
Wow. Said it was 9.5 hours?
Yes. If you watch both back to back.
Holy fuck.
Ooh, yeah. That one's good. Great film. I mean, you have to pay for Shining, but. So.
All right.
I think we're reaching the point in our conversation where where I think it's a good enough time to rest or wrapping up.
Yeah, I think
unless
so.
There's one more thing you want to bring up before we go. No,
I think,
is there anything else?
I think I'm good, honestly.
I think we talked about all we needed to talk about.
Yeah, so plug time. Jazz, do you want to plug your stuff?
You follow me over at Lady Jazzington on Twitter, as well as Jazzy Oliver on YouTube. And you can go to my voice acting website, jazzyolivervo.com.
Ashley?
Yeah, you can follow me at Ashy Groovy over on Twitter, Ashy Slashy over on Letterboxd. And yeah, that's all my plugs. Crystal?
Yes, Crystal Williams. You can find my Medium account where I write articles about social issues and stuff like that. Or you can still follow me over on the tweeters at Crystal W. Rocks. And you can say hi or follow me or say ooh at me, I guess.
Ooh, whoa.
Ooh, whoa. Ooh, whoa. Okay, quickly before we go. There was a TikTok I saw, and it was a compilation of girls saying ooh, and the last clip cuts to a guy vomiting in the toilet, going ooh.
When we're done here, could you send that to me?
I have to find it, but I'll send it to you.
All right, thank you.
I mainly found... If I find it, it's probably going to be someone else's reaction, because that's how TikTok works. People react to things, but yeah. Oh, Lizzie obviously couldn't be here, but you can go follow Lizzie Lemondrop on Twitter, and you can also find her over on TikTok on The Final Whore. Definitely do that.
She is a treasure.
Yes, the best. And with that, thank you for listening to another episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast. Ashley, thank you for being a guest again. We always love having and talking with you for as much as we can.
Thank you again for having me.
Of course. All right. We love you, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.